If you have visited the University of Wisconsin Arboretum in Madison, you know what a gem it is. And if you haven't had the opportunity to get there, I'm betting there's a good chance after this program you'll want to visit. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Pleased to welcome back Molly Fifield-Murray to the show. She's the Outreach Programs Manager for the University of Wisconsin Madison Arboretum. And Molly, always a pleasure.
It's great to be here. Hi, everybody.
It's wonderful to have you here. Well, the annual Arboretum Native Plant Sale is this weekend, and it's the 25th anniversary.
That's right. I remember the very first one where we had a few plants, and we were on the deck of the visitor center, and now they have a great big tent and a lot of pre-orders, which are done with, of course. But if people come tomorrow about 9 o'clock, they'll find a wide choice of things for them.
How would you say interest and awareness of the benefits of using native plants in our home landscape has evolved? It's evolved a lot over the 25 years or so, hasn't it?
Well, you don't even have to explain what you're talking about anymore, because
yeah, right,
people understand what native plants are, and many people are anxious to do rain gardens or woodland gardens, not mow so much. People are aware of the need to allow rain to infiltrate, so rain gardens are perfect for that. And people want to spend less time mowing and more time enjoying seeing birds and butterflies and things come to their gardens. So
yeah,
it's way more accepted than it used to be, although there are still still places in the state and certainly in the country where they're considered weeds, and there's weed ordinances, and you have to get something past the city council so you can have your prairie garden. But for the most part, it's accepted.
Well, it's Saturday, May 10th, 9 a.m. in the morning to 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and the large tent's next to the Arboretum Visitor Center. And you're going to be able to buy some native grasses or woodland and prairie and savanna plants and trees and shrub, lots of good things there. And it's always, now it's a big event.
It's a very big event, and they plan for it extensively so that there's a wide variety of things mm-hmm. available. You know, they've kept chart for years. When do they run out of trillium, and when do they run out of prairie smoke? And they know all of that. So, you know, they try to follow trends. Of course, if everybody bought trillium last year, maybe they don't need it this year. But they try to plan for that. And they try not to run out of things too early so that even if you're not there at 9 o'clock, there are things for you. So,
yeah.
It's quite an event, and involves a lot of volunteers who are quite knowledgeable about what they're doing these days.
David in Stevens Point has a question for you. David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. I've got a mound system. This is up in the Bluffs in Sauk County.
Yes.
It was built above ground, so it's sand, but they put a layer of topsoil on, planted what they called a wildlife blend of grasses and, I guess, weeds. But I was wondering if I could still plant sand-loving prairie plants.
Yes, their roots will go deep enough to penetrate past that little bit of topsoil they put on there. They really didn't need to do that, but most people don't know that. So sand-loving plants, their roots will go through that and be able to survive there quite well and won't be affected too much by the fact there's a little topsoil there.
Mm-hmm. And not a problem at all for the mound.
No, actually recommended for the mound because it helps take up the moisture and transpiration, and all those ecological functions happen better with the prairie plants.
Yeah.
Would I be better off killing all the grass spraying or getting sets and letting them spread on their own?
Well, it depends on how much time you want to take to both plant it and wait for something to bloom, for instance. So you get things blooming much more quickly if you plant plugs or bare root plants. But it's easier in many ways and more diverse if you can plant seed. You can plant seed after you burn or after you get rid of the existing grass. If it's bluegrass or something, it's not hard to get rid of. If it's brome or something, it's a little bit harder. You can smother sections, or you can use an herbicide if you wish to smother or kill the existing grasses or whatever are there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments as we talk about native plants today with Molly Fifield-Murray of the University of Wisconsin Arboretum in Madison. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post your questions or your comments there. Certainly love to hear from you. And if you got some prairie photos, prairie plant photos, we'd certainly love to see those as well on my Facebook page. And, you know, there are, you ever get tired of talking about the benefits? People say, well, what's good about planting native plants in a landscape?
Well, obviously, I don't get tired of it. But, you know, I think people are becoming more and more aware of the value of diverse landscapes. A lot of schools, for instance, and even people have become interested in vegetable gardening again. And I think they realize that if they want tomatoes, they have to have bumblebees. And if you want to have bumblebees, you have to have diverse planting so they have something to eat, to nectar from and get pollen from when the tomatoes aren't in bloom. So people with fruit trees need diverse plantings of wildflowers, and people with vegetable gardens could use diverse planting of wildflowers too. If we don't have bumblebees, we lose an awful lot of the produce we eat. So it's an important thing to think about the whole ecosystem, and I think people are starting to understand that. Or maybe they already have, but they're paying attention more.
Paying attention more, yeah. Well, we were talking about some of the native grasses, the woodland and the prairie and savanna plants that are going to be on sale, the trees and shrubs. Maybe we should talk about some of the habitats for each of those. You want to do that?
Well, sure. A lot of people have sunny lawns, and that's when we would think of prairie. And prairie can fit in whether it's dry or wet. If you have a semi-shady lawn, which most of Madison has, for instance, or many cities from street trees that have been planted, then you're thinking savanna. And then if they're mature trees, you're thinking of woodlands. The woodlands are really pretty right now because the spring ephemerals like toothwort and trout lily, Dutchman's breeches are blooming, and they disappear in the summer. They're bulbs, so they disappear just like tulips do. But then there are things that will come later, like wild geranium and some of the ferns that will fill in afterwards. So the woodlands are really nice to walk through right now. And there's a Sunday walk in the woods to see the woodland wildflowers. Everything's about 2 weeks late.
Yeah.
In fact, the amelanchiers, the service berries, started blooming yesterday, the first flower, and full bloom, like blip, just by afternoon, they were all open. Crab apples are just starting, and normally they'd have been blooming for about a week. And the magnolias have been blooming quite a long time.
Yeah.
These are not native, but they're in the Longenecker Gardens, and they've just been sort of sitting there with their flowers open and not changing, and that's nice because they usually don't last real long, although there's many different varieties out there.
I'm surprised to see so many around homes in the Madison area.
Right.
On the east side,
noticing them a lot more, yes.
Especially this year, they just seem to stick out. Well, there's nothing else. There's no other tree that's really flowering, and so maybe that's why they've always been there. But
it was winter 2 days ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it hasn't even smelled like spring.
No. I know it. Every morning I go for a kind of a walk jog for about 3 miles, and 2 to 3 miles anyway, and just all through the neighborhoods. And the smell that I mostly have now, like this morning, was kind of wet mulch.
Yeah.
The smell of wet mulch is persistent in the air.
Yeah. Well, people have been out. You know, you have a couple days of good weather, and then all of a sudden everybody's outside, which is great. So it's been a long haul, and it's a tough winter, and it may have been tough on creatures that we like and also tough on creatures that we don't like so much. So.
And, you know, I think one of the benefits of the prairie plants or native plants is that they're they're adapted and they can live through this stuff.
Right. They just sit and wait. There were studies done during the great droughts of the 30s of things like little bluestem going dormant for 9 years. And then it rained and there they were, ready to go. A lot of these things in the woods that are bulbs are perfectly good at waiting until the weather's just right to push up very suddenly. I've watched hepatica not look like anything and then bloom in the afternoon. So
Yeah. So it's really that quick. Joyce in Chippewa Falls has a question for you. Hi, Joyce.
Hello. My question is, it's been a question for about 4 years. Hope you can answer it. I'm trying to identify this plant. I think it's a woodland native. It only ever has two leaves, and they are non-serrated, straight, vein down the middle, kind of like, I don't know, maybe a Siberian iris, I think. And they have up to 1, 2, 3, or 4 flowers, and they're beautiful and blue and delicate, and they are 5 leaves, petals.
5 petals. Yeah.
So it's an open flower facing up, or is it a nodding flower facing down?
It nods.
Okay. Is it a real rich blue?
I would call it periwinkle.
Periwinkle.
There's some violet in there also.
Well, one of the most common blue flowers right now is Siberian squill. Do you know that plant?
No.
Okay, so it's a small, while naturalizing non-native bulb that people have planted for many, many years and will naturalize in a lawn. It doesn't get very tall, maybe about 2 inches, maybe 3 at the most. It's a rich blue, and the flower nods, and it will attract bumblebees, although it's not a native plant. It's not a huge threat to anything. I have another bulb that I should have read the fine print in the garden catalog because it says naturalizes readily, and that's a clue that it's going to spread. And that one's called Glory of the Snow, Chiandoxa, but that's blue with white in it. And
nope, this has no white.
Okay, so I'm guessing it's squill. There's been a lot of it this spring.
Could you spell that?
S-Q-U-I-L-L.
Okay.
Or Scylla, S-C-I-L-L-A. It's called both.
If you go online, you're going to find photos of it pretty quickly.
Great. But you don't think I have to, like, kill it?
No.
Because it's non-native, it's still okay to be there?
Right. It will spread. We pull it out of our native plant gardens and our woodlands, but it's not a big threat. And since the bumblebees like it, we don't pull it quite as much as we used to.
Okay. Thank you. I've been dying to know the answer for 4 years.
Oh, good.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Joyce. Glad Molly could help you out. Molly Fifield-Murray, the Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum. I'm Larry Mueller. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer today on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Molly Fifield-Murray about native plants in your home area and in your garden. Molly is the Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. You can join us. I don't have an open line yet at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Vivian in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. About 20 years ago, I started gardening for birds, and that really led me into prairie plants. And I'm a huge fan of the Silphium cup plant.
Yes.
And I think people should consider it because I have it planted. I have a very small lot, but I have it planted next to my garage, and it's taller than my garage. So you have the blossoms way up in the air. You have bumblebees all over it. It dies back every fall. So if you had it near an area where you needed to do building maintenance, you can always get at that building. In the spring, I take the stalks, break them up for kindling. They're fibrous but very light. And a good toe to the ground level stalk breaks it right off. It's wonderful kindling. They're great in rain gardens. They have huge roots. I use it alongside my fence because the roots go down so deep and they're tough, and it discourages my dog from digging. It holds rain for a few days after a rain for the birds and the insects. The birds drink, eat, and shelter there. I can't think of a better plant for someone.
Sounds wonderful.
Well, it is a great plant, but you did also mention one of the things that make people shy away from it, which is its size. So I wouldn't put it in the front yard necessarily, near a sidewalk or something, or where others might find it too tall to enjoy. Sometimes I've used it as if it were a tree because it gets, 6 to 8 feet tall, and so it can be a focal point in a garden. It is quite attractive to birds in the fall and bees when it's in bloom. There are four silphiums, and each of them have their own characteristics. If you want a silphium that's not going to get quite as tall and not spread very much, the compass plant is very good, cut leaf silphium. It has a taproot. It will not spread to make more cut leaf silphiums right there. And so it's a nice single plant to have. It likes drier soil. Rosin weed is another silphium that's in mesic prairie, sort of medium moisture, medium soil. But it's rhizomatous, so it will form more rosin weed, but it's a very nice plant. And then there's the prairie dock, or what the kids like to call elephant ears, that likes wet prairies, just like the cump plant does. So it's a nice group of plants to think about, but also think place carefully, as you mentioned, next to a fence or next to the garage or in the middle of a planting where it's going to be a focal point.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks, Vivian. Appreciate your call. And Bill in Racine, you're next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Say, I've got some hostas which run the length of this deck I have. It's about 15, 16 feet. And they're well developed, but see, we're going to have the deck redone, rebuilt. So the guy said to me, he was coming in, he said, well, we're going to be working right there. And what my thought is, I don't want the hostas to be ruined, whatever. And I thought, well, maybe I'll dig them out right now, and they're just budding just a little bit, and then transplant them, or, later. Or is it okay if I wait, they'll take a beating, of course, with the guys working there, and then I can transplant them at my leisure later on instead of doing a kind of a double transplant. You see what I'm getting at? I'm getting a little older, and I'm just now looking for more work.
Sure. Well, hostas are not native plants, and I can claim not to know anything about them. But I will suggest that it's probably best to dig them up now before they're trampled, and pot them probably if you want them back in a similar place. When they're just putting on growth, they've spent quite a bit of energy, so you could just try transplanting them right away if you have the place you want to put them. But if you're going to put them back once the deck is repaired, you should put them in a pot.
Mm-hmm. There you
go.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, thanks for calling. Pam in Kellogg, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. I just had a thrill. I had a tanager in my yard. It's the first time I've had one there.
Oh, they're beautiful, aren't they?
They are. I have actually two questions. My hibiscus got kind of those little white flies on it this winter, and I wonder if I can cut that back a little now, or is it too late? I know my friend usually does that in the fall, but is that okay now?
Well, so hibiscus and houseplants are another thing that I can pretend not to know anything about, but I'll try to help you out a little bit. If you have diseases on your houseplants, yes, I would cut it back now, even though it might not be the best time, but you want to try to get rid of the white flies. I would caution you against any of the chemicals that you might be able to purchase that would have neonicotinoids in them. They're quite dangerous chemicals, although they are available. So use something a little bit old-fashioned, like one of the soapy water solutions to help you get rid of the white flies. But cutting it back may work. But I can't claim to know how much that might damage the hibiscus.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions, talking about native plants today with our guest Molly Fifield-Murray of the UW Arboretum. And if you are interested in incorporating native plants into your landscape, are you? Why or why not? Would you like some advice on native plants for specific growing conditions? I know Molly can help you out with that, too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Call now. We'll get you on pretty quickly. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And we were talking earlier about trilliums. You yes. like trilliums? I like them.
Oh, sure. They're some of the favorites. Of course, there's more than one species, but the one that people think of is the large flower trillium, Trillium grandiflorum. It's a very interesting plant, but the deer like to eat it, so it's a little bit hard to keep in the arboretum. There are trillium growing in woodlands in Dane County Wild, and back when I was in school a few years ago, Jim Zimmerman told me that they don't know why one woods would have trillium and another woods wouldn't, but I think our experience at the Arboretum would suggest that it depends largely on the deer population. And if one woods has fewer deer than the other, the trillium might have a better chance of surviving. There's also the red trillium. It's sometimes called prairie trillium. I don't know why, because it grows on the woodland edge, a savanna or oak woods species. It's quite pretty. I don't know what pollinates it, because it has a dark red flower, which would suggest a fly or something comes to it, because it looks like meat.
Yeah.
It doesn't smell bad that I know of, not that I've bent over and taken a whiff, but I haven't seen what pollinates that. And then there's a nodding trillium that's quite lovely, a little more delicate than the Trillium grandiflorum. And they're all available. Many of them are available at the plant sale this weekend, tomorrow, and quite popular woodland garden plants.
We have a wonderful Wisconsin Life piece to listen to about trillium. So let's give a listen to that.
Walking through damp woods after a days-long road trip from central Texas to central Wisconsin, I spot them. White, triangular blooms in sharp contrast to the dark ground cover shaded with pines. Trilliums, I say in surprise to my mother-in-law, Agnes, who wears sandals but follows me anyway into the trees of her yard in Stratford. The trillium, a native plant, hides in the damp woodlands of Wisconsin, similar to the rainy shadows where I'd grown up in Washington State. Years ago, I'd combed my own forested backyard for the white blooms with a reddish tint, on the hunt not only for the flower, but also for a change in the season. "There's more over here," says Agnes. She has a natural green thumb and is just as excited about the flowers as I am, despite the miles we've just traveled, two couples and a pug in a blue pickup. Each trillium bloom grows on a separate foot-high stalk. Three broad leaves circle the top, crowned with a trio of white petals and dusty gold stamen in the middle. A closer look reveals veins of pink, a tint taking over the flower and turning it purple as the flower ages into early summer. The white or large flower trillium, a common variety in the Midwest, is a close cousin to the Pacific trillium I grew up with. My brother, Ken, cautioned me not to pick the trilliums of our Northwest home, out of fear the slow-growing flowers wouldn't return. Each flower takes 2 years to form leaves and another 5 to bloom. Long seasons worth waiting for. So intent was Ken on protecting the flowers, he'd count them, keeping careful tabs on each year's floral harvest. I wonder about these tallies now, whether they served as a naturalist tool, a measure of how wild the forest stayed despite our presence, or a reassurance winter had ended. Agnes stays intent on the flowers, not counting them, but coming close in her search for more. She finds a few patches, some abundant as snow, on the wooded acreage of my in-law's farmland. My husband and I visit the trillium patches during our stay, monitoring the visible progression of the flowers from bright white to faint strains of lavender. After we fly back to Austin, Agnes sends us trillium photos, the blooms pink-striped at first, and a deeper purple later with a lengthening light. Now, from a home in Polonia, I anticipate the trillium's return at my in-laws or my own backyard, each flower both a memory and a promise of warmer days ahead.
Oh, that was a nice piece. Wisconsin Life, by the way, is produced by Erica Janik in collaboration with Wisconsin Public Radio and Television and the Wisconsin Humanities Council. And Gail is the author of Texas Dance Halls and teaches at UW-Stevens Point. So that's kind of fun.
Yes.
A lot of fun. And we have questions. We may have questions about Trillium, but right now I think we've got some other types of questions. Jody in Appleton has one for you. Hi, Jody. Jody, are you there? Oh, we lost Jody. Let's go to Elaine in Milwaukee. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I know that I have milkweed in my yard in Milwaukee, and I know that every year it makes those little milkweed pods and the seeds come out. And I thought that's how milkweed got around, but recently a neighbor told me that he thought it was that a bulb grew under the ground and that the plant keeps coming back from the bulb under the ground. Is that true?
Well, yes, in some ways it's not exactly a bulb, but it is a perennial. Well, there's many kinds of milkweed, but the common milkweed will come back every year, and you could also use the seeds to spread it. And of course, milkweed, the milkweed family, is the only thing that monarch butterfly larvae eat, so it's really important. In fact, there's a whole movement to plant milkweeds of various kinds to help make sure that our children and grandchildren have a chance to see monarchs in the future. Nonetheless, it does come back, and it will spread a little bit. Common milkweed can be an annoyance to some, but it's a very important part of the ecosystem. Milkweeds have this fascinating sort of mini ecosystem. There's a milkweed bug. There's a milkweed beetle. There's monarch butterflies. There's all sorts of things on milkweeds that are fascinating to look at.
Yeah, very cool.
So if you wanted to spread it, do you just use this, like, could I plant the seeds, or could I dig up the roots and like split them and spread them around? Or
I wouldn't try to dig them up to split them. Most native plants have pretty extensive root systems, and even though they grow by the root systems and you could do some digging and dividing, it would be much easier to plant them by seed. Woodland native wildflowers you can divide in the fall after they've bloomed, but I wouldn't think that dividing the milkweed was the easiest way to spread it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, great, thank you.
Thanks, Elaine. Jane and Racine, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have a area, it's a small patch, but it's an area on the south side of our garage. I apologize, on the north side of our garage. So it is shady almost all of the time. And we have not been able to really successfully grow anything there. And I would like to know if there's some sort of native plant or woodland. I would prefer something that flowers, but I realize it may have to be some sort of grass or reeds or something. Do you have any suggestions for that area?
Well, sure. When you think of the north side of the garage, you might think of a maple woods as an example of the kinds of ground layer plants that would grow there, except we have to remember that maples don't have leaves in the spring. Mm-hmm. So you can't really expect the spring ephemeral wildflowers that are only up and blooming when the leaves are not on the trees yet to do very well there. But if you think about what's growing later in the woodlands, things like wild geranium, many of the ferns, and the things that, while they bloom in the spring, keep their leaves all year, like bloodroot and wild ginger, all would do well if they're getting any partial light at all. They wouldn't do well under an awning, but on the north side of the garage, they should do okay.
Yeah, there's no awning there.
Yes.
Okay, is maple woods a plant or, excuse my ignorance here, but is it a plant or a tree or a shrub?
Well, so when you're thinking of native plants, you can think of communities of plants, groups of plants that grow naturally together.
Okay.
So when I think of a shady area, I think of the maple basswood forest in your area, which would have been quite shady. And I would think of, well, what grows on the ground there? And there are, you know, there are hundreds of plants, but some of them need the deciduous leaves, the leaves that fall off in the spring, so that there's sunlight in that woods in the spring. So those plants will not do well on the north side of a garage. But the plants that can survive the whole summer in a shady woods would do okay on the north side of garage. So that's how I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a wonderful way to conceptualize it. So wild geranium, ferns, bloodroot, wild ginger, those are all examples.
Yes.
Yes.
And even hepatica, hepatica, which is one of the very earliest blooming, has almost evergreen leaves. Last year's leaves last until this spring, and then new leaves come on. So there are things that bloom. They're not necessarily going to bloom or be real showy in the middle of the summer.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. This has been very informative.
Sure thing.
Thanks, Jane, for calling. Appreciate it. We have Dar in Green Bay next. Hi, Dar.
Good morning. Thank you. You are wonderful.
Thanks.
I have this wonderful nuisance plant. I call it a tiger lily. It's not a tiger lily. It's tall. It's orange, big orange blossoms, and the underground roots go crazy. What shall I do with them? Shall I keep them?
Is it a day lily, then?
It looks like a day lily.
Yeah. Well, you can eat them.
They take over.
Yes. Well,
what part do you eat?
You can eat many of the parts. You can make tempura out of the buds or the blossoms. But you can dig them up. They're rhizomatous, and they also spread by seed. You would want to cut off the blossoms so they don't go to seed to stop that kind of spread. And then you can confine them where they are or dig them all up, which is takes some work, but they will spread, and you see them along roadsides now that they've spread on down the road, either the seeds or some roots dragged there by a mower or something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they're wonderful and absolutely terrible at once. I just dig them up and give them away. I think I'm polluting Green Bay. I'm giving away so many of them.
Well, you could plant some of them next to the giant reed grass and see who wins.
Yeah.
Next to what grass?
Oh, the giant reed grass that grows in the ditches up there. That's quite a pest.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
There we go. Thank you, Dar, for calling. Jody in Appleton. Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I had previously 7 acres of prairie. But we moved away from that house, and now I have a small lot on Lake Winnebago, and there's a holding tank buried only 2 feet below the surface of the soil. And I wondered, can any prairie plants go on top of that, or are the roots too deep that it would be a problem?
Well, do you have to get the holding tank pumped out frequently and therefore access is needed?
We do, but I don't think that would be an issue because that's at one end and it's above ground. So I could do some camouflaging of it and still have easy access from the driveway for the pumping out.
Okay. And it's in full sun?
Yes. Very sunny. It's the west side of the house.
Okay. Well, yes, you could prairie plants, if the roots can't go any deeper, they'll spread out.
Okay.
So you can, you would probably choose to plant short plants there just so you're not planting some of the ones with 16-foot roots. So
okay.
You could plant things like bird's foot violet and golden Alexanders. You could try prairie drop seed there, although it does have deep fibrous roots. It might work there. A lot of the smaller things, Seneca snake root, blue-eyed grass, yellow star grass, although some of those need a little moisture, so you'd have to keep an eye on them.
Okay, which kind of grasses did you say?
Well, they're not really grasses. They're they're wildflowers that have the name grass. So
got it. Okay, so wildflowers with shorter roots rather than really deep roots.
Right, and shorter stature also, so they're not very tall above the ground, if that's okay in that situation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure thing.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. We have Mary Ann in Hurdle, Wisconsin, up next. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. I just have a question about Siberian iris. We have, we brought some up here from Chicago, and we planted them. They did absolutely nothing for years. Now they're kind of overgrown. The flowers are really small, and there's a lot of greenery, and they're way taller. So there's a lot of brown from last year. So I'm wondering, do we cut off the brown dead leaves? And if so, how far down? Is it okay to transplant them and separate them out because they're just too thick? And is it a native plant?
Well, Siberian iris is from Siberia, perhaps.
Yeah.
you never know by the name, but it's not a native plant. There are native iris. They're smaller than some of the big iris you see in gardens. I'll have to speak from how my mother did this, but she would divide her iris in the summer after they bloomed, and she would do that even if they hadn't gotten too thick, because iris get borers, and so you want to sort of clean out the bed periodically and throw out the roots that have borers in them, and maybe that's some of the browning of the leaves, although it was a hard winter, and then replant there, and then move around the ones or share them with somebody else that are too thick.
All right.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Molly Fifield Murray, our guest today, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This coming week, you will have a chance to raise a toast to spring with me, Larry Mueller, in Washburn, Wisconsin, at the Washburn Cultural Center. It's Thursday, May 15th at 6 p.m. I'll be there on a kind of a meet and greet, Garden Talk kind of greeting. And we'll have food from Coco's. We've got some beverages, of course, and a chance for you to win some prizes. Some books, some WPR gear, probably some T-shirts, and I know there's some tickets to Big Top Chautauqua in there as well. So I hope you will join in. If you're in the Washburn area, the Washburn Cultural Center, tickets are $15, and that money goes to support the WPR programs that you have come to love. And if you'd like to sign up for the event, you should try and do it ahead of time. Go to WPR.org/events, WPR.org/events, and we'll raise a glass and have some food and toast the arrival of spring in Washburn, Wisconsin at the Cultural Center. Should be a lot of fun.
Well, it's a good thing it's next week.
Yeah,
maybe the snow will be gone.
Maybe the snow will be gone. Oh, my gosh. Well, we'll be toasting spring, if snow or no. Allison in Plum Lake has a question. Let's go to her. Hi, Allison.
Hi. I have a place on up in the Northwoods, north of Eagle River, and I have 5 acres. And I have one issue that's erosion on a hill where we had to go down the hill to rebuild a boathouse 2 years ago.
Yep.
So I have a lot of pine trees, a lot of
dropped leaves and pine nettles that are kind of established deep all around. And I'm trying to grow grass next to the cottage. I'm trying to grow anything that'll fill with color or texture or will feed birds, bees, and butterflies, but that will not be too super sensitive to drought or to deer, because I like to feed the deer and have them around. So I'm looking for inexpensive ways to hold soil and to create like a meadow grass and to grow areas, you know, like near the entrance to my driveway. I have a tennis court. I'd like to have plants around that. I'd love plants around my where my parking spots are, so that when you look out a window, you see whatever could grow that's flower or color or interesting, but that I'm not going to be crying every time deer eat it.
There are a number of plants that grow naturally in pine forests that might be helpful in this situation. One of them is a sedge, a Pennsylvania sedge, and other sedges that you can find at a variety of nurseries that forms a carpet on the floor of the forest to some extent. It's not exactly a lawn, but it's lawn-like. It's not very tall. It's blooming right now in southern Wisconsin, but it won't be up in northern Wisconsin right now. But it's a very nice plant to add for this kind of situation. And then you can think of the wildflowers that grow naturally in the pine forest, such as Canada Mayflower, Starflower, which has my favorite Latin name, Trientalis borealis. I've been able to remember that one for a long time. So Starflower, Canada Mayflower, which will spread. Then you have blue-beard lily, which doesn't spread a whole lot. A large leaf aster. Now, I can't speak to how many of these are eaten by deer, because I'm not up in the North Woods, so we'll probably get one of Larry's callers that will let us know that. But there's a whole bunch of a group of plants that grow naturally together up there that would be good to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Susan wrote on Facebook, she said, I had to do some plumbing work last year, tore up the whole front yard, pulled out some evergreen bushes that I didn't like, starting with a completely blank canvas this spring. Finding native flowers I like is pretty easy for me, but I'm seeking some attractive flowering shrubs that will grow in tall and wide enough to act as foundation plants near the house to give the yard some structure. The yard is south-facing and sunny. What do you recommend for medium and large shrubs?
Well, there's wonderful native shrubs that are very attractive to wildlife. There's a whole group of them, and there are a variety of sizes and a variety of root structures. So if you just think about the dogwoods, for instance, gray dogwood isn't hugely tall, and it will form a mass. That is, it spreads by roots.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very attractive flowers and a very attractive berry for birds in the fall. There's more compact, such as nannyberry. It gets tall, but it doesn't spread as much. It gets maybe 20 feet tall, although not next year. You know, it's not going to shoot up real quickly. There's a variety of woody shrubs that can grow in both sun and a partial shade. Even something like ninebark, Physocarpus, which is also in the nursery trade, and you can get varieties of it. If it's full sun and you want something in front of the taller things that's not too tall, but adds sort of structure to the garden, you can think of New Jersey tea, which only gets about 3 feet tall. And then there's witch hazel and hazelnut, both of which, hazelnut's in full sun to partial shade. Witch hazel can be in shadier situations. It gets taller than the hazelnut. These all have pretty nice fall color. There's the elderberries, which can be used for your own food, too. Mm-hmm. My grandmother was famous for her elderberry wine during Prohibition. I've never tasted it myself. And then there's the other things, aronia, black chokeberry is also useful in the situation you've described.
There we go. Lots of good suggestions there. Jackie on Facebook says, is spring a good time to split and or transplant native perennials?
Well, I think it's hard to transplant things when they want to bloom and they've just set up shoots. So I think that's hard on the plant because it's spending a lot of energy right then. So it's better to mark where they are. And if they're ephemeral, you can mark where they are and then divide them later after they've gone dormant, or divide them in the fall when they've put their energy back into their root system and then divide them then. I think it's hard, pretty hard on plants to divide them in the spring unless it's really early spring.
Okay. Mary Ann in Schofield. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I have a call. I have a garden that was huge, and I want to plant half of it into prairie flowers and grass.
Yeah.
And last year, the season was bad here, and we had a lot of weeds in there. And I'm trying to figure out how I can get rid of them and when is the best time for me to seed that.
Well, you can seed prairie gardens at a variety of times. This spring has been a little hard because there was no spring, and now it's spring and maybe summer. Yesterday got pretty warm in southern Wisconsin. So starting a prairie garden does involve a couple of years of dealing with weeds, which one can mow off unless they're perennial weeds that you have to get rid of, like Canada thistle. If it's just annual weeds that are coming in because the prairie plants haven't taken over yet, that's less of a worry. There's a lot of instructions for doing these kinds of things on both the Arboretum's website and the websites of many of the nurseries in the state. So Prairie Nursery's website or Prairie Moon's website or JR New, they all have planting instructions and site preparation instructions. If you've already planted prairie in it, you probably don't want to go back to site preparation getting rid of everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep.
There's also, if there's a Wild Ones group near you, I'm not sure. Where's Schofield?
Wausau.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Central Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a Wild Ones
there's
group.
There's Wild Ones groups in the area, and a lot of them have good advice, and they also have some nice handouts for you to look at if you can't find what you want at one of the nursery websites.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure. Yeah,
thanks so much for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments as we talk native plants today with Molly Fifield-Murray, Sandra in Dubuque, Iowa. Hello.
Hello, Larry. I think Molly might be just the person I need to speak to.
Good.
We currently have a very large area on the backside of our house that's filled with weeds. It also has several large pine trees in the area, and so it's mostly shade to dappled shade to part sun shade. The soil is great because of all the pine needles decomposing, so it's wonderful soil. And I'm wanting, we can't get in there with a lawnmower, not that I would want grass anyway, but there's, you know, other landscaping on each side of it, rocks, et cetera, rock paths. So what I'm wanting is maybe a combination of bushes, mass plantings, you know, maybe grasses that would complement each other that, you know, would look good together in that area.
Sure. Well, I go back to some of the things I mentioned for the woman up north, such as the Canada Mayflower, some of the other things that can grow in. Now, is it sand under the pines? Are they natural pines, and is it sandy?
There's a huge white pine, and then there's some different varieties of pine trees, long needle, the blue spruce, quite a variety of pine trees. It's not sandy soil. The natural soil right here is clay.
Okay.
It's just that it has really good, you know, really nice composted black topsoil.
Sure. Well, in the shadier places, you could try something like for shrubs, you could try the dwarf bush honeysuckle, which gets maybe 3 feet tall. And you could also try the witch hazel that gets up to 25 feet tall over time. But in the sunnier places,
the honeysuckle, but the witch hazel you said, and how tall does that get?
The witch hazel can get up to 25 feet tall.
Okay.
The dwarf bush honeysuckle is the native one. It's Dyervilla lanicera. It gets 2 to 3 feet tall, blooms in the spring. It's not something I would put as a showpiece, but it's a nice filler. You can also do the chokeberries and the nannyberries that I mentioned to the earlier caller.
Okay, yeah, I do have some black chokeberries in another area. So what did you mention besides that one?
Nannyberry?
Nannyberry?
Yes. It's another viburnum, Viburnum lentego.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Then you might think about some ferns in there. They can be sort of the common ones, like lady fern, that will spread quite a bit, or a wood fern that doesn't spread quite so much and doesn't get real tall. 2 to 3 feet from those two ferns.
Mm-hmm.
Interrupted fern gets up to 4 feet tall. And then a variety of wildflowers if you wish, but if you're mostly doing masses of shrubs, you don't need to worry about those too much. You could put in things like wild strawberries that would spread around and offer some snacks and some blooms in the spring.
There you go. Lots of good advice. And don't forget the native plant sale Saturday, May 10th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the University of Wisconsin Arboretum in Madison. Visiting with Molly Fifield Murray on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Native plants make a whole lot of sense in gardens. Not only are they beautiful to look at, they come back year after year, can stand many of the extremes that our climate throws at them, and maybe a while before we know if this year's long cold winter took its toll on our native plants, there's a good chance that they were more resilient than the non-natives. Certainly, I think Molly Fifield Murray agrees with me on that. She's the Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison, always has great information to share about using native plants effectively. And Molly, great to have you back for Garden Talk.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
You know, we have phones. People can call in at 1-800-642-1234. They can post on my Facebook page going to the Larry Mueller Show, and sometimes people post photos and wonder what plants. And we got a nice photo from Rich Peterson, who says, this comes up every year. What the heck is it? And it's a pretty plant.
Well, it's a pretty plant, and I just noticed that there's a hummingbird moth in the foreground of that photograph,
yes.
Which has a very long tongue that can get into the milkweed. So it's a milkweed. It's probably Asclepias incarnata, which is used to be called marsh milkweed, but they've sort of modified the name of it because it doesn't need to be in a marsh to grow. But that's what it looks like to me. Very attractive, attracts, as you can see here, hummingbird yeah. moth and hummingbirds themselves, bumblebees, and lots of butterflies. It's
yeah.
a very nice plant.
Very nice plant. Shar in New Berlin has a question. Hi, Shar.
Hi, Molly and Larry.
Hi.
I've had the most beautiful large trillium plant for a number of years, and this year, for the first time, the other day I looked, and it's all chewed off, and it's a rough kind of chew, so I don't know if that means it's a rabbit or a deer, and I was wondering if it'll come back next year with flowers. The plant is still there. It's just that all the beautiful blooms were chewed off.
Yes, a rough chew like that is probably deer because they tend to rip things as opposed to bite them cleanly. Rabbits can bite quite cleanly, so it's probably deer. They like to eat flowers of trillium and passiflowers and the things that just come up in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
You could try, if you don't have a whole lot of them, you could try next spring before it blooms to put some wire around it or something to keep the deer from eating it. It should recover because it has a chance to continue to grow yet.
Okay, good. I also have a little plant that I thought was a trillium, but you didn't mention this one. It was called Wake Robin.
Yes.
And it has speckled leaves, and I think, I can't remember, I think it gets a yellow flower. Is that a trillium?
There is a trillium called wake robin. I don't remember a yellow flower. The speckled leaves is also on the red or prairie trillium. So it might be that, and it just has another common name. Or it might be a trillium that's from the Illinois, Chicago area that's up your way. And I don't think, though, I don't remember a trillium with a yellow flower. I'll have to look it up.
Well, when it blooms, I'll have to okay. check. I can't remember. Also, I have planted a number of years ago a cup plant, which gets quite tall.
Yes.
And I liked it. I did like it. But now it's spreading all over into my perennial area, and I was wondering if I can spray that to get rid of it, although I know it has a long root.
It has extensive roots. Spraying it will be a little bit tough, and I'm less and less fond of using chemicals myself.
Mm-hmm.
You might cut it off and paint the stem if you want to just kill that individual plant. And paint the stem with an herbicide if you wish to kill it that way. You can confine something that's going to spread like that. You can confine when you first plant them. I know this is after the horse is out of the barn.
Mm-hmm.
But you can plant them within a pot that you've cut the bottom out of. And then that helps to confine the roots in the place that you really particularly want them.
Okay, because it would be impossible to dig it out? There's real many little flowerettes coming up now, or leaflets.
Well, it's not impossible to dig it out, but it is going to have an extensive root system.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Okay, real good. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Char. And Janice in Green Bay, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very full, mature red maple in our front lawn. And because of it being so full, I don't have a good grass take underneath that tree. What could I plant that's natural that would give me some color, but yet won't invade and take over the whole front yard?
Well, sure. So what's going to, if it's a red maple and not a Norway maple, there are things that will grow underneath that. And we've mentioned some of them already, such as the spring ephemerals that would be blooming right now. Like toothwort and trout lily, Dutchman's breeches, and then there are the ones that will stay around longer, such as wild geranium, wild ginger, and you can the rue anemones, false rue anemone, and they are not likely to spread into a yard. If it's a Norway maple, not much will grow under it.
No, it's truly a red maple.
Okay.
And I just want to put a splash of color around the trunk.
Sure.
And cover the dirt.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for the
yep.
suggestion.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Jim in Wisconsin Rapids, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Hey, here's what I got. I got 5 acres worth of mixed hardwoods. Right now it's kind of wet. It's in Adams County, so it's kind of sandy soil. And in fact, there's kind of little small, those little temporary ponds that are in there. But what I'm wondering is, what kind of plants, flowers, whatever, could I put in there just by seeding? Just, you know, throwing around some seeds and seeing what comes up.
Sure. Well, people have been mentioning the cup plant and the rosin weed. The cup plant and the prairie dock, for instance, you could throw in there as seeds. They'll get quite tall. There's a lot of wet prairie plants and sedge meadow plants that could go in there, anywhere from the red milkweed we were talking about that's called marsh milkweed sometimes, marsh marigolds, which bloom in the spring. There's asters. There's a lot of sunflowers that grow in damp areas if it's sunny, and they're very important for butterflies and other pollinators in the fall. So sawtooth sunflower, it gets quite tall, but you can almost always find monarch butterflies coming to it in the fall.
Where can one get seeds for those?
Well, you can get them at many of the prairie nurseries in the state. Prairie Nursery isn't too far from you. You can just, if you go on the internet and look for prairie nurseries, or go to the Wild Ones website and look for nurseries that are mentioned in Wisconsin, you'll find quite a few.
Mm-hmm. So this is not something you can pick up at Home Depot or your local seed store, huh?
Well, your local seed store, they may very well have wildflower seeds like this, although not very many homeowners are going to have the wet kind of situation you're talking about. So you might have to go looking, but if you went, so for instance, in the Madison area, if we went to Jung's or to the Bruce Company, we could find native wildflower seeds at those companies. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the big box stores, whether they would have anything. A lot of the things that are sold as wildflowers at some of the big box stores are actually from the state of Oregon, and I wouldn't plant something here unless you were sure it was a wildflower, truly a wildflower, and sort of locally sourced. Some of the things that are sold as wildflowers in packets at a big box store are wildflowers for the West Coast, or maybe even things that we consider pests like Dame's Rocket I've seen in some of those seed packets.
Mm. Okay. All right. So you can buy like milkweed seeds and things?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And they would do pretty well just by sowing around, or?
Well, it's good to get the seed in contact with the soil however you can, whether you mow it off or burn it off or just bend over mm-hmm. and get it in contact with the soil whatever way you can.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is pretty shady in the summer, but...
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Talking native plants today with Molly Fifield-Murray. And let's turn to Lee in Green Bay next. Hi, Lee.
Yes, hi. Are you hearing me okay on the phone?
Yes.
Okay. I was up digging some balsams on my property by Tomahawk yesterday, and I've seen this plant before. It's a woodland plant. It's very short. It's a small plant. It's almost like a miniature evergreen, but not conical. It would be more of a spreading, anywhere from 2 to 4 inches, but it looks just like a little miniature evergreen. Would you know what that is?
Well, there's a couple of things it could be. It could be something in the Equisetum group. Horse's tail is the common one, but there's a variety of them. A lycopodium is another option. I'm guessing it's going to be one of those two things. There are a variety of very short things in where you were probably digging that would be either a horse's tail, Equisetum, or the lycopodium kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. We'd always love to hear from you. And we have a question. Michelle's coming up from Port Washington with a question for you. So let's go to Michelle next. Michelle, thanks a lot for calling.
Good afternoon. I have a question about planting and growing bittersweets, and I'm not sure how it is grown or if it comes from a plant or a shrub, but I'm very interested in planting some in my yard.
Okay, well, bittersweet is a vine, and the native one is a vine that coils around, and so you don't want to plant it on a tree that you care about, but because it would eventually kill the tree. But if you have a pole or a tree that you don't care about or is already succumbing, then you could plant it near that. But it does coil around and it would choke a tree eventually. The Oriental
okay.
The Oriental bittersweet, which is the one that's frequently used on wreaths, which has berries all along the stem,
mm-hmm.
you do not want to plant. It's becoming a horrible pest plant in many woodlands. And I don't think it's been banned by the DNR yet, but it will be eventually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that was the Oriental bittersweet that we want to stay away from?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, and would you just find those at nurseries?
Well, you'll find the Oriental bittersweet more readily than the native one. There are some woody plant nurseries. You might try Johnson's Nursery and see if they have it.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Becca sent us a note on Facebook wondering, is there any kind of perennial or even low shrub or grass she can plant next to her cabin in Washera County? The soil is pure sand almost, mostly shady. Also, we aren't there a lot of the time to water or anything. We are normally up there 2 to 3 times a month, April through October.
Well, 2 to 3 times a month is plenty for watering, except maybe the very first time you plant something. So sandy soil up north. How about blueberries? Then you could eat.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. That's what I'd go for.
I kind of like that idea. Oh, Roxanne in Trade Lake. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I'm not sure if I can do this or not, but I have some jack-in-the-pulpits that are in a spot where I need to get them out of. And I'm wondering how I would go about moving them and if it's safe to do so without getting into trouble because they are maybe protected or something like that.
If they're in your own property and you're moving them, you're okay with doing that. I wouldn't advocate digging them in the wild in any case.
They're on my own property.
Yes. Well, you can move anything anytime if you take all the soil that's with them. But if you don't want to dig that much, it's better to transplant them in the fall. But okay. If you were going to move them right now for some reason, I would just dig up the whole root ball, a bulb kind of situation, and move the whole thing and then fill in the dirt where you dug it out with something else.
Okay. They happen to be in the middle of a really nice plantation of Japanese knotweed that's being treated, and so that's why they have to be moved.
Sure. They're then you're probably going to want to be very careful getting the roots off of the knotweed.
Yes.
Yeah. No, we're to the point where we can start doing a little bit of that. It's been a couple of years, so we're okay with that.
Okay.
And then I have an old trout lily or dogtooth violet.
Yes.
In a flower bed.
Yes.
And it's starting to spread like wildfire, and it's crawling down into the woods. Is there any way, are they like lily of the valley that I can just take a chunk up and move them?
You can move them. They're bulbs. They're probably spreading because the ants are carrying their seeds around and taking them off into the woods. They're fine in the woods. They're not a threat to the woods at all.
No, I just need to get it so that I can mow again and get them kind of contained, because otherwise I'm just going to mow, and I don't want to do that.
Okay. Yeah, you can move them. They're a bulb. They're going to disappear in about 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And back to the knotweed, you need to be very careful with Japanese knotweed that you're wearing gloves if you're pulling it, because it can form, if you get the sap into a cut or something on your hand, it can form a tumor.
Oh, okay. That I did not know.
Okay.
Be careful.
But yeah. No, it's dead enough that it's, and it's kind of on a peripheral part of it. But yeah, I did not know that about the rhizomes, so I will do that. And then if I could add something to the caller before asked about these little pine tree type things.
Yeah.
Is that what I maybe grew up knowing as princess pine?
I don't know.
Little wreaths out of as Christmas?
Oh, you might have, sure. Yeah, kids might call it that, yeah. Sure.
And is that protected? Is that invasive? Is it?
It's native, not invasive. It can spread to form a nice mat. I think they're really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're beautiful. But when you call it horse's tail, I always learned that there was a male, like a male and a female.
Right.
And you never picked the female, and that had the little yellow kind of a tail on it that you always left those. You could pick the other one.
Right. Well, there's a lot of different species.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. And David in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I have a 10-year-old prairie nursery prairie in my backyard, and I'm trying to create more diversity in this thing. I've got a lot of goldenrod, not the invasive one, but the other ones, the desirable ones. But it's very a monoculture kind of thing, and I've tried pocket planting prairie plants that I've gotten from the extension. I've done seeding with, collected thousands of lupine seeds in the woods and scattered them about, and I'm really not getting anywhere. Is it okay to just take a weed whacker and clear some little patches within the prairie, throw down some potting soil or what have you, and then sow the seeds in that? Would that work to try to establish a few more flowers?
Well, the way the arboretum learned to diversify prairie that had been planted in like an old pasture was to plant seeds after they burned in the spring or in the fall.
Which I'm not allowed to do.
You're not allowed to burn?
No, not in the city of Green Bay.
So no. do you cut it off and remove the mulch?
I do in the spring. I just did last week, and I grind it up for my lasagna beds.
Okay. So I would, right after you've cut off the standing dead material, I would plant seed right then. You can also plant it, if you cut off some areas in the fall, you could plant it then. But plant seeds after the seeds need to touch the soil.
Well, that's why I say if I threw down some potting soil or some, just a little bit, because it is a clay soil, and I just question whether the seeds really are having that soil-to-seed contact in order to germinate. And then the thing is it's a race to outgrow all the grasses and what have you in the spring if I put out seeds, if I sow seeds.
Well, sure, that's true, but the arboretum prairies now have more than 200 species in them, and they started with 40. So they were able to do that by adding seed after they burned, and if you can't burn, after removing the standing dead material. And if I would not add potting soil, I would just put your seeds in there and scratch the soil a little bit in between the clumps of the grasses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, then.
All right, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. And Molly, I want to go back here in our last minute to mention tomorrow is the big sale.
That's right. Saturday, May 10th at 9 a.m., 9 a.m. to 2 is the plant sale. Sunday, we have a Sunday walk at 1 o'clock. We have trolleys tomorrow, 1, 2, and 3 o'clock. They're free, but you get a ticket at the visitor center. There's all sorts of things going on at the Arboretum all year round. Earth Focus Day Camp is coming up, and you can sign up for that online. Well, you can get the registration form online. So, yep, it's a busy time.
And there's so many walks and stuff through the summer. It's really a really
right.
cool place to be.
Well, the Friends of the Arboretum sponsor the weekend walks. They're free for everybody, and it's nice if people join the Friends. They get information mm-hmm. about this, and then they also get a discount at the plant sale.
Which is nice, too.
Yes.
Molly, thank you so much. Look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it very much.
Sure thing.
Molly Fifield-Murray is the Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. She'll be back, and, of course, we'll visit with her again about native plants. Monday at 11, entomologist Phil Pelletieri stops by today with an update on what our insects are up to right about now. Lots, I'm sure. And lots in store for you. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.